The Woj Pod is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Hey everyone, welcome into another edition of the Woj Pod. This is a post-bubble edition for me. I have broken free from that sweltering Central Florida heat, enjoying some kind of the cool breeze of autumn here in the Northeast, which has been pretty awesome here since Sunday, but still sweating in that Florida heat is Bobby Marks, our ESPN's front office insider. And Bobby, how are you? How are things in Florida? I was there so long, I was getting every day these, like, hey, have you registered to vote in the state of Florida? Alerts on my Instagram, Facebook, everywhere, but I did not register to vote in Florida, unlike you, who I know is registered and is voting.
Well, you were there so long that you probably don't have to pay. You don't have to pay taxes, right? State taxes. There's no state taxes in the state of Florida, so that's one of the perks we've got down here.
Yeah, that's one of the many perks. I'm gonna gladly pay my taxes in Jersey, and I'm gonna put a sweatshirt on to go outside and feel pretty good about that. Speaking of another, Bobby, it's kind of a Central Florida resident in his off time, Billy Donovan, the new coach of the Chicago Bulls. Bulls hired him yesterday. What was your reaction to that hire, Bobby, the fit there, and now, you know, really kind of the new leadership structure in Chicago? Arturis Karnisovas is president. Or executive vice president is the title. Mark Eversley is GM, and now Billy Donovan, after 5 years in OKC and a couple national titles at Florida, takes over the Bulls.
Well, I thought it was the perfect fit. I really did. You look at Billy's track record, the 5 years in Oklahoma City, the fewest wins was this year, which was 44, and that was in a shortened season in 72 in 72 games. They've been to the playoffs every year. I know people will glance at losing in the first round, but I think his best work was this year. Post Paul George, post Russell Westbrook, had a kind of in-between team in Oklahoma City with a veteran in Chris Paul. You don't get that in Chicago, right? So Chris Paul is not in Chicago with him. But you had a lot of player development with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Lou Dort. And then you can kind of go back to when he was at Florida. I mean, he's a proven he's got a proven track record. The roster in Chicago is interesting. We've talked about it. We actually talked about it before during the pandemic, before they even made a coaching change, where with a mix of young players, with Wendell Carter and Kobe White, Lauri Markkanen, that's player development focus, and then Zach LaVine, who's kind of a borderline all-star. And I think the big thing, Woj, is that you've got the support with Arturis Karnisovas. Having worked in Denver with Tim Connelly, the hiring of Mike Malone there, how they built that roster, and I think there's going to be a trust level there. So I think it's a good hire. It's kind of one of those teams that will be fighting to try to get into that back end of the in the playoffs next year.
Yeah, I think, certain coaches in certain situations – based on what they need, and not every coach is right for every situation. I'm not sure Billy would have been the right guy in Philly. I don't know if that's what might have even appealed to him. But Chicago, they've had a run of assistant coaches. Tom Thibodeau was an assistant coach before he took over, obviously had a lot of success there. But, you know, either guys who had coached at all in Vinny Del Negro, Fred Hoiberg, who knew the NBA very well, but had been a college head coach. Jim Boylan, again, another NBA assistant. I think Billy, for what they need and his ability to build relationships with players, which I think is going to be important there, build a trust and but still coach him hard. I think he's perfect. I agree with you. I think he was the perfect hire for them. I think for him to be, it is a rebuild, but there are some pieces in place. I think this is a team that underachieved. We'd all agree with that. Lauri Markkanen, I think he needs someone to come in and I think, kind of rebuild his confidence a little bit and you know, show some belief in him. And Zach LaVine needs some stability. He needs a head coach to come in who's going to be there and make him feel like we're in this together. And there's no reason this can't be a playoff team as soon as next year. And then this is a team that'll have cap space in the future. And listen, we've seen Chicago should be in the conversation with the LA teams, with the New York teams, when there's a big free agent. Like, they're not going to be in the – listen, I don't think Anthony Davis is leaving the Lakers to go to the Bulls. But, you know, Anthony Davis, when he was looking to leave New Orleans, you know, Chicago was in such a state of disrepair, it wasn't an option for him. And I think if you're the Bulls, you want to have in place an organization that when the next Anthony Davis comes, the next kid who grew up in Chicago or the next star anywhere, it'd say, hey, that's like the Bulls. Like, that's an organization that I've got some belief in, that has the right people in place and guys I'd want to play for and a front office with a track record. And, you know, I think look at Arturas right now. If Chicago hadn't hired Arturas Karnišević, when they did before this playoff run, think of how in demand that Arturas would be out in the marketplace right now as an executive, given what he helped Tim Connelly do in Denver, putting that team together. So, yeah, I think it's a really good hire for them, a good fit. And I know that Arturas and Billy, who didn't really know each other, they had a couple common friends. One Sean Ford at USA Basketball, and who was close with both and had worked with both. And I think there was a trust built pretty quickly between them. And I know that went a long way for Donovan to go work for a president that he didn't have a relationship with. And I think Arturas made it pretty clear to Billy right away, hey, you're the guy we really want to try to get a deal done with, move forward with. And Casey Johnson wrote about this in Chicago, and he's exactly right. The money that they've laid out in Chicago, listen, Billy Donovan, I don't have the exact numbers of this deal, but it is more, I believe it's more than the Bulls have paid for a coach since Phil Jackson, I guess. I don't know. Actually, maybe salaries weren't as high then. I don't know what Phil made in his last year. But in terms of this modern era, multi-year deal, I think the question around the league was, Bobby, would the Bulls pay? They paid for a new president. They paid for a new GM. They're paying for guys who aren't working there anymore. And I think the fact that they went out and paid a market value for Billy Donovan says something about maybe a renewed commitment there to do what it takes to build a successful, sustainable organization.
Well, and this is not a year ago when revenue was flowing through, right? I mean, that was the big thing, Woj, that we had talked about, is that would teams, you know, let coaches go, eat money with this pandemic going on? We don't know when fans are going to be back in the building. Hopefully, sometime next season. But I look at it with Arturas as the, you know, as the president and the head of basketball operations, and he has plenty of experience working with Tim Connelly in Denver. That this will help Arturas. That you have an experienced coach who has been in many big games. It's a little bit different than when you hire maybe an assistant coach or a former player, where you got to kind of hold his hand a little bit in the beginning. And there's nothing wrong with that. Everybody has to go through that process. But just like the little things, like when you're planning the team travel, right? Like Billy Donovan's done it for like 4 or 5 years, where it's there's such a newness. There's a newness for them, and you're right as far as I mean, they've committed a lot of money. You know, Billy Donovan wasn't coming off a year in Oklahoma City where he was let go and Oklahoma City was still paying him, right? He's sliding in there on a new contract with Arturas, with Mark Eversley, and it's interesting. And we'll talk about some other teams, but we have a lot of coaches openings here, and there's going to be a lot of teams that are going to have to pay some pretty good money to get some of these coaches.
Yeah, and that's going to be the question: big market versus small market. With no revenue coming in, with teams not knowing when they're going to get fans back in buildings. Adam Silver said yesterday that to CNN that he expected no earlier than a January start. I think it could be much later than that, or not maybe much later, but February, March, potentially. I think the NBA is willing to push it back. If they see an ability to be able to get fans in arenas and it means pushing it back, they'll do it. If it looks like it's not going to make any difference and it's not going to be any better, or it's not going to be any more accessible to let fans in a month or 2 months, then you just start it in January. There's no reason to keep delaying it, but that's going to impact the revenue. So Indiana doing a coaching search, small market team that gets anywhere from, what is it, Bobby, maybe 25 million, 28 million in revenue sharing, whatever the number might be in that ballpark. They're doing a search. New Orleans, small market, doing a search. What is it? How does it impact what they might be able to pay? And then you got Philadelphia, which, you know, they've shown a willingness to spend regardless. You know, that job right now, and, you know, I had reported it when Mike D'Antoni left Houston. I think Mike D'Antoni is in a strong position there. Ty Lue is in a good position there. That's a candidate they're still talking to. And so, you know, those are coaches who, you know, in that, you know, whether that's, I don't know what that looks like for their head coaches. Is it 6 million? Is it 7 million? Is it start at 5.5 in a pandemic and then move up? But Mike D'Antoni in Philly, though, Bobby, you're trying to imagine how they play with his style, with Joel Embiid, with Ben Simmons. I'm curious your thought about the fit and how he plays, how that meshes with the roster.
Well, the fit is interesting because you're going from one extreme to the other. You're going from Houston, where you had Robert Covington playing center and PJ Tucker as your four. In a small ball lineup to the traditional 90s basketball, right? With Embiid and Horford and Tobias Harris, you know, certainly with Ben Simmons there. I don't know how that fits, Woj. I mean, and some of those pieces are not going to be moved, easily moved out. It's not like you can move out Horford or Tobias Harris and then you know get a 6'8" wing. I mean, that's not happening. But from a credibility standpoint, and he has been there, right? He was there in his height the year. Yeah. So there's a familiarity as far as with that ownership group, with some of those pieces on that team. There is that has, you know, from an experience standpoint, that works. But as we've said, like this roster, when you look at the Eastern Conference with Milwaukee and Toronto, Boston, Philly, Brooklyn, right? I mean, we could probably say Philly is sixth in pecking order potentially there. So it's almost like Mike is going to have to change to fit what he would be inheriting there.
Yeah. So those conversations are ongoing in Philly. They haven't made an offer to anybody. And so, you know, the other openings, New Orleans, I mentioned Indiana, Oklahoma City, think they'll take their time. I think especially teams, like, there's no rush. Like, let's be honest, there's no rush to start paying somebody in these markets. Like, the season may not start until January, February. Training camp may not come until December. There's not a rush to hire somebody and get them on the payroll and then get a bunch of assistants, except do you not want to lose out on a candidate? Do you want to make sure you can get some assistance that you want? But I don't think any of these teams, Indiana's narrowing it down to like five candidates, and they'll start maybe bringing some people in for interviews or doing another round virtually, whatever it's going to be. And they're just narrowing it down. Those conversations won't be until next week. And, you know, and that's, you know, among that list, you know, we reported Dave Yeager, Chauncey Billups, you know, are among a bunch of candidates still in Indiana.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand slams, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
You mentioned earlier, Bobby, the Nuggets and Arturas and what Denver did last night to cut that series to 2-1. Having been in the bubble and having been around that Denver team, what I'm most amazed at is, especially in that environment there, and I think we all thought this going in, and I never felt it was the case, and I give guys a lot of credit for this. I thought when teams were on the ropes, it would be easy to just let go, and it would be easy to say, okay, we made a decent run here, but we can get out of here. And they didn't do it in the first round against the Jazz. Now, once they got Michael Porter playing well in that first round, you felt like they had maybe one more weapon than Utah did. That's how I felt. Once Michael Porter had established himself there, you go, geez, if Utah had Bogdanovich, you'd feel differently about it, 20-point score. But against the Clippers, down 3-1, and then down double digits in 5-6-7, you go, that every chance to say, okay, we've had a great run here. We're not supposed to beat these guys. Let's go. And it's to the credit of that organization that it did not happen. And obviously this Laker team, I thought maybe that game two might have broken their spirit a little bit. And yet they come out, get a big lead in game three last night. And I don't know that they're going to win this series, but it's been pretty remarkable to see the resiliency and the growth. Just imagining this Denver team coming back next year, and Jamal Murray is, I think, a transformed player. I don't know. We all thought he had a chance to be very good, but he's become a star. He's become a star in the league, and you do that in the postseason, and he has done it. He's done it in a big way.
Well, and I think the resiliency in Game Three. There's not that many teams that would have given up a buzzer beater in a game two loss and then up 18 going into the fourth quarter, and basically a tsunami all of a sudden hits you, right? As far as that lead went from 18 to 3 in a matter of minutes, as far as turning the ball over, how they adjust, the lack of adjusting to the zone. You're right. I mean, Jamal Murray, and I was asked, I talked to the team earlier about it, and they said, do you think Jamal Murray, is this who he is like now? Is this the bubble, you know, because he's playing every day? It's like, you know, it's funny. I was watching golf. I mean, I'm jumping off here. And they said, like, you know, we've all these young golfers, right, who are kind of emerging. And they're saying, well, like, it's because there's nobody in the stand. There's nobody, like, cheering them on. There's nobody. They can just play. I don't know if that's the case with Jamal, but he has turned into a star, and he had two big shots in, you know, in the game three win. But that team is resilient. We've counted them out multiple times, you know, certainly after they lost in game two. When you have two foundation players in Jokic and Murray, you can just build around that. It makes it a more appealing. You always have to have that third X factor. They got it in Jeremy Grant in game three, who played really well both ends of the court. Monty Morris, you know, the guys they draft in that second round, Monty Morris was pick 51, signed as a two-way in his first year, you know, has a non-guaranteed contract in 2020. I mean, come on.
Right.
Like, that's what you need. When you have guys committed to, you know, $28, $29 million, you know, Millsap, Jokic, like, you need those Michael Porter Jr. making $3, $4 million, the Monty Morris's. You know, Jeremy Grant's making $9 million, and there's a foundation going into next year. I mean, they'll have. It's funny. Well, I've been sitting on this Denver article for about 3 months for off season article.
You're end of the season. Yeah.
Since August 13th, right. I've been sitting on it, and the one big thing is really it's they've got to figure out their bigs, right? You've got Plumlee, you've got Millsap, you've potentially probably Jeremy Grant as your free agent. Torrey Craig's restricted free agents, and you know, who comes back out of that group. Maybe everybody comes back and you kind of give it another run, because as you know, this free agency period is going to be a little bit of a slow crawl here.
Is Denver, Bobby, is Denver a team, I hate doing this already to them, but is Denver a team that the composition of that roster and what they can do, how much of it is going to be dictated by where that cap salary cap falls for next year? If it's a team that maybe doesn't say, hey, we're just going to go, I don't know that they'll go deep in the tax right away this year. I don't know that they won't, but how do you imagine where that cap falls impacting what Tim Connelly may or may not have to do with that roster?
Well, how I look at it, if the luxury tax stays at $132 million, which is the same as this 2019-20, they've got about $32 million to divide amongst four of their free agents. I mean, they're going to have to choose as far as Torrey Craig. Jeremy Grant probably deserves more than what he is earning. He's at 9.3 right now. He's probably a $12 million guy, but is there, you know, I mean, but then it's like, well, who out there is going to pay that? Right. Like,
yeah. Paul Millsap's not making $30 million plus.
Mason's not making $10 million plus. So, right. You know, I think Grant is the priority, and then it kind of falls in. And Woj, like, we haven't even talked about Will Barton. Like, Will Barton is not even in there. He guy averaged 16, 17 points this year and started for them in a lot of games here. So, you're right. I mean, Denver has never really jumped into the luxury tax. I think during the Carmelo era, they did for a little bit, I think maybe 2 years. But I don't see them being a tax team. And I think they'll use that pool of money to kind of prioritize who their free agents are going to be.
Yeah. I think the Nuggets are a great example of patience and Josh Kroenke allowing Tim Connelly. You know, I had Tim on the podcast last week, and he talked about early on in Denver and feeling like he made a couple missteps early, and that, like, what you're gonna do sometimes when you are taking over a team and you're starting out in it, and that Josh Kroenke just allowed him to keep growing. He believed he had something in Tim, and Tim and Arturis and, you know, allowing those guys to grow in the job, and then they started hitting on picks, and they really hit on picks. And, you know, getting Jokic in the second round changed everything for them. You forget Jusuf Nurkić was the same draft as Jokic, and I think Nurkić was maybe 16th or 17th overall. Well, yeah, that was a really good pick for where he was.
Well, and they took I think they were at 11, and they went they moved back. They got 15 and 19 from Chicago. Chicago big Doug McDermott and Denver wound up taking Gary Harris and
Nurkić. Harris.
And then,
yeah,
I mean,
that's right.
Those are the type of deals. And then the Emmanuel Mudiay pick doesn't look as, you know, I mean, like, hey, right. Everybody has one or two, but if you can hit on three or four of these guys and a guy in the second round, get an undrafted guy like Torrey Craig, like, you start to your budget that you have, that's kind of what you can afford.
Yeah, and then obviously Michael Porter Jr. has a chance to be really, really, really good. And you knew he was good before. It was never a question of talent with him. And so you've seen his emergence in the bubble. And Bol Bol, who looks like there's a role in the NBA for Bol Bol. He played in the seeding games. He's not going to play or hasn't played in the playoffs. But you can see some another second round pick they bought on draft night from Miami in the 40s that like Bol Bol has like Michael Porter. This was a guy who was a top five pick before his freshman year of college. And so they've done a great job. They've been obviously the team, the story of the bubble in a lot of ways. And, you know, if the Lakers go on to win a title or whomever wins a title, that it'll be remembered for that. But certainly Denver. And it leads me to this, Bobby. There was a lot of talk maybe even a month ago, 6 weeks ago, about starting next year in a bubble, that, hey, we have to be open to the idea. And the further we were in that bubble and went along, the more and more I got a sense, and I think others got a sense, that I think everybody in the league wants to do everything they can to not go back to it, not just from everybody's going stir crazy and it's not normal. But I think the owner's appetite, understandably, and the player's appetite to get the revenue streams back, to get fans back in arenas. Financially, it's scary to have the fans out for this long, but you also don't want fans out so long that they just like, you just don't assume everybody's going to come flooding back. People find other things to do in this world. And whatever all the entertainment options there are, and you don't want people out of NBA buildings for so long. It's not a habit anymore. And you don't get everybody back. And so the more and more time goes on here, the greater sense I've gotten from around the league, the union, players, owners, certainly, that, boy, they're going to do everything they can to, in some shape or form, have fans in arenas next year, even if that means it's socially distanced. We're seeing it in football in some places. I don't think they've ruled the bubble out, but it certainly is. It's kind of the last thing anybody really wants to do right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think the NFL model, and there's not every team doing it down here in Miami. You know, the Dolphins have, 25% capacity. Hey, 25% capacity is better than 0% capacity, where you can have fans coming in, you're sitting in certain areas, you have, you can enter the building between 7 o'clock and 7 to 10, for example. Right. That's how you have assigned times when you are supposed to enter the arena here. And I think when the commissioner talked on, CNN, when he did that Q&A, was that, like, as you said earlier, they're going to put this out as long as we can. If it's late January and we start on Martin Luther King Day, or maybe we start in February here, that there's not going to be a rush to get this thing going, mid-December here. I don't think that's, that's not realistic.
No, and I think they're looking really closely at the NFL. The NBA is really watching the NFL, college football a little bit. It's still a little different, but the NFL and what it means to have people in the stands, how it's working in suites, because obviously that's where you can put fewer people and get obviously more money, are in the suites. And teams like Golden State, I think Golden State on average makes the most of any team in the league based on like one game night of tickets and suite sales and retail and all the things that go into somebody going to an NBA game. And, the trickle down is significant, because whether it's the Lakers, the Clippers, the Nets, the Golden State, the Chicago, the big market teams pay out revenue sharing to the small market teams. And those checks could be, we mentioned earlier, 20 million plus, near 30 million in some cases. And without those revenue sharing checks for the small market teams, how competitive of a roster will teams put together? Are you going to see a bunch of teams go down to the floor of the minimum they can have for payroll? And so how this plays out and what the projections are going to be for next year, I think are going to really impact teams when we get to free agency and obviously the draft prior to that, when teams can make trades and start altering their rosters.
Yeah, I mean, a year ago, we would have said that a team like Indiana would probably use their full mid-level exception in free agency, where probably that might not be the case now, where money committed, or you could say a team like Charlotte that has, $20, $25 million in cap space, they're probably not going to use all that money. There's no incentive unless they can maybe find a good player to go out and spend, because as you said, the revenue is not coming in. Teams like Atlanta, that's got 40 million plus in cap space potentially. You go out and spend $30 million on two players, well, you're not having $30 million in revenue coming back into take care of it. And that's where I think you're going to see, and we'll see in the next couple, month here, a couple weeks, a lot of guys starting to opt into their contracts. We're going to have a lot of free agents here, probably DeMar DeRozans of the world, guys like that, the Gordon Hayward when they're eventually done, maybe players that would have been a free agent a year ago. And it ties things up where you have, your tax teams, then you've got a lot of teams with exceptions where I think teams will be a little bit more conservative. That doesn't mean that, Brooklyn doesn't make Joe Harris a priority. I think Sean Marks has already said that he is a priority. And I think with that ownership group that there is a appetite to pay the luxury tax because you've already committed to Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, right? You've kind of already jumped into the deep end with that.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to watch, Bobby, teams who have cap space, even some of the smaller market teams, they're not going to improve their team at free agency. You're going to see it perhaps in salary dumps where there's some very good players who teams, you know, a team's got three of them and we can only keep two of them and we're going to move one out. And so whether it's a Memphis, a New Orleans, an Atlanta, a Cleveland, whoever, are those going to be teams that try to get aggressive when, hey, we can take on that salary and you got to give us a pick or whatever it's going to be, another asset with it. And so that'll be, I think, how free agency looks. It'll be more, I don't know if it's, like you said, you have free agents, but most guys, the guys who are going to be free agents are free agents. But the guys who can opt out of their deals are probably good in almost all cases going to opt back in.
Yeah, I mean, we've got 41 players that have a player option. We're probably looking at 37 that are going to opt in. You know, maybe guys like Austin Rivers, who's on a minimum, you know, there's no danger as far as going back into free agency to do that. I think the transaction game, and you hit Memphis was a great point because that they did that last year. They did that with Andre Iguodala. They did that when they did the Mike Conley trade, parlayed those two things into two future first round picks.
Well, free agency will be here soon enough. Actually, we don't have a date yet on free agency. We know the draft is November 18th. Free agency will be after it. They still haven't negotiated a date for that with the union. It could be, you know, they could do it like they normally do a few days after the draft, or actually normally it's like a week, 8 days. But with Thanksgiving there, I do wonder if maybe with Thanksgiving right there and the fact that the season is probably not going to start until at least maybe mid to late January at the earliest, you could see a scenario where free agency starts like hypothetically December 1, get past the Thanksgiving holiday, and you don't have to worry about free agency being right up against the start of training camp. So we'll see where that date is. But Bobby, always great to catch up and visit. I'm sure we will talk again soon, man.
Thanks, Woj. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Woj Pod. A big thank you to my guest today, ESPN's front office insider, Bobby Marks. Be sure to listen to new and archived episodes of the Woj Pod wherever you get your podcasts. Also, be sure to check out The Low Post with Zach Lowe and The Hoop Collective with Brian Windhurst. We'll catch you next time.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.